This is the Jabberjaw Podcast Network.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special.
Hello and welcome to a very strange episode of Lead Singer Syndrome, a different style episode today. I'm here with my very good friend and bandmate, Paul-Marc Rousseau.
It's true. Here I am.
Here he is. He's right here beside me. I'm touching him.
Yeah, stop that. Stop that.
Ow. How'd that hurt my hand? I'm the one hitting you.
I'm super jacked.
Makes no sense. You are. Just stop flexing over
the
there.
Knuckles.
So, yeah. So, we're doing weird stuff today. We decided he's going to talk to me about stuff, and almost like I'm the one being interviewed, or maybe I am the one being interviewed.
You
it's going to be different. It's going to be weird. We're recording this just live off the floor. You know, we're sitting in my apartment right now, and we're going to see how it goes. So thanks for tuning in. Before we get into this, I just want to make sure you guys know you can get in touch with me, leadsingersyndrome@gmail.com. We're on Twitter, @leadsingersyn, S-Y-N. We have an Instagram, @leadsingersyndrome as well. So check all those things out. Probably naked pictures of Paul-Marc on the Instagram coming soon. So definitely you want to be, you want to, what do you do on you follow? You follow. You want to be following the Lead Singer Syndrome Instagram for sure, for shirtless pics.
Prepare yourself.
We're ready. So, I mean, this is your first rodeo.
Yeah.
So what's rodeo me? Let's see what you got for me. What are you going to ask me?
I can't tell you what I'm going to ask you in advance. I think we're just going to have to start at zero, which is where we're at now. This is an absolute zero. We're going to move forward to
negative 273 Celsius.
Oh my God.
Zero
Such
Kelvin.
Such a nerd. That's a great place to start.
Nerd.
Yeah. Okay. Actually, that you answered one of my questions, which was, can I swear on this bullshit?
Oh yeah. Oh yes. You can swear on this bullshit. Yes.
And then my second question was, I was going to begin with, why are you such a nerd? And what's with this, you know? Where'd this come from? How do you know that thing you just said?
Dude, I like paid attention in school. I like surprisingly wasn't the kid smoking pot between periods. I was like, you know, studying and stuff.
God, and look where it got you.
I know. Weird, right? But what's fucked up about it all is that I can't remember shit, man. I can't remember what happened yesterday. How do I remember what negative like zero Kelvin or absolute zero is? How do I know that? Why? It's completely pointless to my life.
But yet, just right here, you made me look like a fool by knowing this. So, I mean, it's got some, there's some teeth
know.
To that knowledge.
But it's a weird thing, though. Wouldn't you agree, like, in our dynamic of our band and hanging out, like, there's times we're sitting around, and I always feel like someone will have you having a discussion. It's like, let's ask Shane. He probably knows this. I'm like, why would I fucking know that?
And how many
but
of those
But it happens.
Yeah, and you do know pretty much every time, I would say.
Yeah. Or but like, there's always people like that. Like, Josh's friend Mark, for example. I know he at least knows more than me about everything. Like something.
At least everything.
Everything. Yeah, actually. I think so.
He knows more than you about stuff that you don't even know you don't know about.
Yeah, that's accurate.
Yeah. That was a very you have a way of kind of like phrasing these weird like superlatives.
Yes, I do.
And I think I just did it.
You did like, a Shane Told there.
Yeah,
yes, you did.
We can't know till we know for sure.
That's why I say it all the time, and truer words have not been spoken.
It is true, man. Yesterday I was waiting in line at Bellwoods Brewery to see if I could get a quick beer and a drink before heading up to watch the Blue Jays game.
Yep.
And we only had about 20 minutes, and I was like, I said to Andrew, this isn't looking good. And he was like, I don't know. We can't know till we know for sure. We got to ask.
That's right.
And so it's permeated even a group of friends that you don't see that often.
It's crazy, right? It's kind of like all the Yogi Berra-isms, you know? Like it's ain't over till it's over you know, that's the most famous one.
He said that first.
Yeah, I think that's a Yogi.
So that's a man, not a bear.
That's a man, not a bear. Baseball player, New York Yankees, catcher.
Right.
See, I just know stuff.
once you go down the rabbit hole of trying to know stuff about baseball, it's like a full-time job. I don't know how you do that.
I mean, just been following it like my entire life. You know how much time I waste? Like, it's baseball season. I watch pretty much every Blue Jays game. I would say, like, if there's six games a week, I probably watch, I'm not even kidding, like, I watch at least five of them, usually all six. Do you know how much time that is I'm wasting?
Especially because two of them this week went to extra innings. It's like a full, yeah, like, you're in it.
That's right. Oh, yeah, I'm not turning it off. You're crazy.
I did turn I'm ashamed to admit I turned it off because the Raptors game was starting.
Yeah.
You can't bleed into that.
No, we got game seven today.
It's terrifying stuff.
I know. When people are listening to this, we will know if the Raptors had a good one or a bad one.
Yeah, so they'll have to listen to the podcast you tape after this to hear your tone of voice, and they'll know.
Hi, guys.
I'm so sad, DeRozan. Why are you shooting 22-foot two-pointers? Just go to the hoop or shoot a three. What are you doing?
Someone made a really good tweet that was like in the Pacers series. I think it was Mark Little. Do you know who Mark Little is?
No,
like
I don't
Canadian
know Mark
comedian.
Little. No.
He's really funny, but he posted if the Indiana Pacers erected a 40-foot wall in front of only DeRozan, he'd still try to hit a turnaround jumper over it.
That's pretty good. It's pretty good. It's true, though. Yeah.
So your love of sports is, you don't hide this at all. And I mean, didn't you write something for ESPN one time?
No, I was supposed to actually write something for ESPN. And
but
then
I read the piece. Where did I read it?
Oh, no, I think that was maybe just for the Absolute Punk one.
Oh,
I think.
Yeah.
I was supposed to do a column for them. Like a monthly.
ESPN.
No, for Absolute Punk with Drew over there. And I guess it's not even Absolute Punk anymore. It's like,
oh, I have
Chorus.
No idea.
.fm or something. Yeah, it's all different.
It's changed.
But I was going to do a monthly column kind of relating music to sports. And I think I did two of them. One about talking about backing tracks being like the steroids.
Yeah,
of,
yeah. I love that. That's the
one
I remember.
Yeah, yeah. I'll post a link somewhere so people can check it out.
It's a good
read.
It was
a pretty cool article. Oh, I hope it's still there. Maybe it's not
like
even there if that website doesn't exist anymore. But
oh, man. The internet is a terrible place.
Yeah. Well, we could do the Wayback Machine thing or whatever,
Wayback
right?
Machine, totally.
Yeah.
If you guys don't know about Wayback Machine, it's this like amazing website that lets you access pretty much any website from any time. You just like pick the day of life that you want to go back
That's
to.
That's right.
Like you want to see ESPN.com on May 3rd, 2006, and you can do that.
You can do that, exactly. You can see what the headline was or whatever. You can even do it with SilversteinMusic.com, actually.
You can
go to it and see some, like, probably some hilarious, I don't know, badly written news posts or something. I don't know.
Yeah, who's responsible for that? You know, I actually went to the YMCA Rocks website
trying
to find an old picture of, like, my first band ever.
That's great. Yeah, man. Wayback Machine. That's a shit right there. Yes. But so I wrote a couple columns for that. And then I wanted to do it every month. And I wanted to get kind of do like a sort of a blog thing. And to be honest, just it was a combination of not having the time and not really having that many ideas I could relate to like music and sports. Like I was like, okay, that's a good one. And then I don't even remember what the second one was. But no, man, like sports are, I'd say like probably my first love before music. It probably, you know, being a kid, I like, you know, had the dumb dream like every kid is, I'm going to be a baseball player. I mean, like, yeah, a lot of people want to do that.
Did you play baseball growing up?
I did. Yeah.
Were you good?
I was pretty good. I mean, I didn't play. My dad didn't want me to play like rep baseball. So I think because he just didn't want to spend every weekend like traveling, you know, somewhere in Ontario or in the U.S. to like play tournaments and stuff. Because my dad played rep baseball and I think he just didn't want to. I think he just didn't want me to do it for some selfish reasons. Hi, Dad.
Because you could, if you were better than him, it would be like a sort of reckoning.
Oh, no, but there was a point of contention there. Like, I remember I had one baseball game. I went like 4-for-4 with like six dingers or something. And I had like the best game. And of course, my dad was like, yeah, pretty good game. He didn't run out, you know, run out that ball or whatever, or some shit like that. And I was like, you know, how good were you, Dad, like when you played? My dad's like, come on. I'm not, you know, not to toot my own horn, but I was good. So we always would talk like that. And basketball, too, because I played basketball even more seriously than I did baseball because I played for my school and stuff. And with basketball, like it was the same thing. My dad was like, you know, I guess an Ontario, all Ontario guy or whatever playing basketball. So I was always living in my old man's shadow.
And you will forever, because he's got like 2 feet on you.
He does.
He could dunk
over you
for
sure. My dad is a big man, and I am not a big man.
That's a strange thing, but it's a true thing.
I want to know how tall the mailman was.
Oh, boy.
Ooh. Sorry, Dad. Sorry, Mom.
God, yeah. Okay, well, that just went down like a... I don't think we want to open that can of worms.
No, that was a bit of a lead balloon.
Is that another yogi?
I don't believe that's a yogi, but no. That's another thing about the way I speak, and people laugh when I say certain expressions, because my mom talks in expressions all the time. So yeah. I know all these random things, and people were like, ah, ha, ha, it's so funny. Did you just make that up? I'm like, no, it's probably an expression from like the 1950s.
It's an interesting thing. Like, I mean, you know, we spend a lot of time in, you know, overseas or in countries that don't primarily speak English, and you start using expressions like that, especially for you, expressions that confuse English speakers.
Sure.
You run into some problems with that, I would bet.
It's true, but that's something that people don't, like, people speak English all the time. They don't realize what percentage of we speak in is expressions or in, you know,
idioms,
or sometimes even references to things like quotes in movies and stuff, especially people our age, like,
yeah,
you know, like I say, like, everything's coming up Milhouse, and like,
yeah,
you say that to somebody in Russia, they'll be like, what is a Milhouse? You know, so
you don't think they have The Simpsons in Russia?
They probably do. Yes.
I mean, maybe now.
I think they definitely do.
And like, lucky them, because they get to go back all the way. It's all fresh.
They
get it now. They get to like learn all this great Simpsons stuff.
Why does Homer sound so different in season one? I don't understand.
And even I don't understand that. I'm still mad about it. Actually, I think I'm too young to have appreciated the early Simpsons as much as maybe some of my friends.
Yeah, probably. I mean, I'm old enough to remember when The Simpsons like came out.
No.
Yeah, I was like in grade four. I had a Bart Simpson shirt, because the merch was huge, right? Like,
well, I bet.
The show came out, everyone's wearing the merch. I had like a crew neck sweater that said, "I'm Bart Simpson, who the hell are you?" And my neighbor, my friend that lived down the street, his mom like got all pissed that I wore it over to the house.
Because
it said hell on it.
Yeah.
And then my friend said something about the shirt later, because they didn't like kick me out of the house or whatever. It was just like, I think she might have spoke to my mother, and we thought this was hilarious. And then one day the same friend was like, "Yeah, you know the shirt that you have that says, I'm Bart Simpson, who the bad word are you?"
Oh no.
I was like, oh my God. We're not living in the deep south here. This is not Bible Belt. This is Canada.
You know, actually,
but
that happened, like, even I had a Blink-182 shirt when I was in grade school, and it said crappy since 1992.
Right, yeah. And crappy punk rock or something?
I don't remember, I guess, exactly what it said, but it definitely said crappy, and the teachers at school made me put a piece of tape over it every time I wore it.
It's crazy. Crappy?
Like, yeah, crappy is like it's like the most flaccid swear word. Like, flaccid is almost a worse word than crappy.
Yes,
yeah. I feel worse saying that.
I definitely do, yeah. Yeah, I mean, even like, I don't know, there's words that offend me more. Like, I hate the word Bluetooth. I just hate the way it sounds. I'd rather hear crappy than Bluetooth. Ugh, God, it's such an awful sounding word.
Why, do you picture someone with blue teeth, or do you picture the jerks that have a Bluetooth headset and you just want to punch them?
I do know that meme with the black guy with the blue teeth that's like, is this Bluetooth or whatever?
Wait, that's not
I
what
do
I'm
picture
thinking
that. I don't know. It's something I've something I think it's a meme or I don't know. But
I just like don't understand why you would name it that. Why Bluetooth?
I don't know this. This is not something I know.
It's not Bluetooth.
I know
or
stuff,
a tooth.
I don't know this.
Alright, well, I guess can I make a pitch to your listeners? Write in if you know the answer.
Write
to
in,
this.
Please. Yes.
Write into whatever address Shane has you write
do
into.
Do the Twitter.
Do it on Twitter, yeah. Do it there. But
see,
don't ask me, because I don't know. And
at
don't tell me.
Singer Sin, S-Y-N, yes.
At Lead Singer Sin.
S-Y-N.
S-Y-N.
The reason it's not at Lead Singer Syndrome, people are like, oh, it must have been taken. No. Twitter cuts you off at a certain amount of characters.
They do, yeah.
Those bastards. So,
they're just exercising control over us at every moment.
Everything they can do to hold us down.
Yeah. Yeah.
The man. Twitter's the man.
They're the new man. I'd say, what's the guy's name who owns Facebook?
Zuckerberg?
Yeah. He's the man. He's the first time we've actually had a man to be the man and blame him. He's the guy.
They're doing some, I don't know about Facebook now. I think they're always doing some real dirty stuff over there.
Oh, for sure.
I'm afraid that this is going to ruin my career by saying that, too.
You know, it's too late, though, because they've already, like, I have my iPhone sitting on the table right here, and they've been listening this
whole
time anyway.
That's right, they're listening. Yeah. And you're going to start getting ads about Bluetooth speakers.
I am, yeah.
That's right, the keyword Bluetooth. God, I can't believe I'm saying it this much. This is awful.
Yeah. You know, we're talking about Facebook. We're talking about Twitter. And these are things that, like, how much pull do you feel to have to use these things versus wanting to use them as, you know, as the singer of a band, to bring this back to the original point here?
That's a good point. That's a good question. Yeah.
How much of this is, like, pleasure for you and how much of it is the job?
I think I used to think of it as more of an annoyance, those things. Like, and it was like every time there was a new social media thing that came out, like I'm going back like to like when it was like Friendster, which I'm sure most people don't even remember. Like it was like that was like basically MySpace before MySpace. And all this stuff comes and it's like every time there's a new one, it's like, fuck, I have to sign up for this fucking thing again. Like what was the one, Elo or something?
I still get emails from them.
Oh, the worst. Yeah. What is it? I don't know. But there's all this shit, you know? But I do legitimately enjoy, and this isn't even bullshit, I do legitimately enjoy the fact that I can interact with people and with fans and stuff. Like, I can post something and get feedback on it, whatever it is. And if you don't have that, how are you also going to get that, like, sort of feedback or that connection with people? Like, I mean, you could email or whatever, but that's, like, I don't know, it's kind of like a big thing, going through emails, having to email each person back, writing, you know, this is like, oh, I got a tweet, cool, I can like it, I can acknowledge that I like saw that and thank you. So that stuff's like, I think that stuff's all really like cool to be a musician, a singer, and be able to have that, you know. I mean, in some ways it's a bit like superficial of a connection, but it's still like, I mean, it's such a different world from where I grew up. Like if I could fucking, like my favorite band when I was a kid was Metallica. If I could send Kirk Hammett, you know, a tweet being like, hey, man, sick solo on Enter Sandman, dude, and he can just like it, I would have lost my fucking 9-year-old shit.
Yeah, that's a good point. Like, I have a hard time kind of like reconciling with that. And like, you know, someone, a fan tweets and you like the tweet and then you think, well, that was really easy for me. Like, I read the tweet, glad to receive it. But you don't think about how that's going to affect.
I don't know. I think sometimes people have this idea that you're just like too busy to do anything and you're living this like rock star life. And it's like, oh my God, he actually has a phone and he has a, like, he looks at it and stuff. He's not like, it's not his manager. Cause people think that, people are like, oh no, it's probably his manager that like replied to this tweet or something.
Yeah.
You know,
if people only knew how much time you spent just sitting on a couch looking at your phone.
I know. It's probably way more than most, I'd say more than 90% of the people listening to this.
But yeah, most people have to go to work for like 8 hours a day. That is you going to work.
This is me going to work. That's true. But I'll tell you, man, this Snapchat is, I'm kind of having fun with it now.
Oh, it's the best.
It is kind of the best.
It's the best one.
It's so weird talking about this because originally I was like, this is definitely the lamest thing. And like the fact that everything is temporary, which is actually kind of awesome.
Best part.
You know? And then I'm just like, oh, then people are going to just send me like pictures of their penises and stuff all the time, which has only happened once. Don't get any ideas, people. I don't want to see that.
To be fair, that was me, though.
Well, we're going with the Instagram pics later. We're going to put shirtless Paul Mark just to get more followers.
You did screen grab that dick pic I sent you on Snapchat, too.
Oh, I have no shame in screen grabbing. I'll do it all day long. But Snapchat's rad, and I think it's kind of going to be the next real big thing, I think.
I think it already is.
So follow me. I don't even know my username. It might be Real Shane Told.
I think it is Real Shane Told.
Something super pompous.
Yeah, I remember when you signed up, you posted that you weren't trying to be pompous. It's just that someone took your name.
Someone took my name, and I hit them up too, and was like, "Hey, can I get my name?" And then they didn't.
Yeah, what's it like? Do you feel entitled to have your own name? Because like in no uncertain terms, you are, I would say, like a more searched out Shane Told on the internet.
I honestly don't think there's another one. My last name, it's super easy. Like people are still like, oh, that's Told, what a weird name. But I don't think there's another Shane Told in the world because there's not a lot of Tolds.
So you think that it's someone who is a fan and snatched up the name?
I think so, for sure.
So in that case, do you feel like they should hand it over to its rightful owner?
I don't know if I feel entitled. I think it'd be a nice thing to do because I don't know why they would want to have my name except perhaps for the purposes of getting people to send them naked pictures of their penises or
malicious
something.
Malicious intent.
Right, because, that, you know, that's a real thing. But yeah, I've had that happen to me where people... I had a girl come up to me at a show one time and, you know, comes up to me and is like, hey. I'm like, hey. She's like, yeah, you know, she starts talking to me and I have, like, no idea who she is or what she's talking to me about. And I'm like, I'm sorry. And she's like, ha 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 ha, like thinks I'm fucking with her. And I'm like, I'm sorry, I don't know. And she's like, it's me. Like, I don't remember her name. Like, let's go with Maria. It's me, Maria. And I was like, I'm sorry. And I guess she was just started like crying because I guess somebody was pretending to be me on the internet and they were talking for like months and months.
Oh,
and
man.
Like, she's telling this person all their problems. And like, then I'm there. And it's like, what am I going to do? Like, I don't, you know, I feel bad for her, but.
So this is, yeah, you know? You bring up an interesting point where it's like, we are kind of like all valuing privacy and anonymity on the internet right now. But there is a point with someone in your position where it can actually be damaging if someone pretends to be you.
Of course it can. Yeah. It's not cool. I don't know. There's got to be some law against it.
I don't know. I don't think there is. I think the internet moves faster than the legislation can. Someone, I had a, I'm sure you've had this too, but like a fake Facebook profile. Someone was pretending to be me.
Tons of them.
It's
tons
just
of
like,
them.
Why? Don't do that.
I
I'm not
know.
Trying to like, don't, please don't.
Yeah. No, I happened to me too, like a long time ago too. I was like talking to a girl, very pretty girl. And I was like, yeah, she's kind of, just kind of sketchy. Like she doesn't want to like actually hang out or actually talk or something. And then I ended up like Googling like something about fake profile and they had like the most common stolen photos.
Oh yeah.
And it was like totally the number one photo.
Nice.
And I'm like, fuck, I'm an idiot. Talked to her for like a month.
Yeah,
the worst.
That's
dude.
Happening though. I know, like a friend of mine who I won't name was you know on Tinder, chatting to some girl.
Oh, Tinder, yeah.
And it was not only a fake person, but a bot. Like it wasn't even a real.
Oh wow.
Like human behind the keys, because it was just like it obviously picked up keywords and would just like say a random response. So like I had a bad day. It's like. Bad days are bad. Like, I hope your good days are better. Like,
was, bad days are bad. That sounds like something I would say.
It does. And you know what? The bot is not wrong.
No.
But it's like, that's scary stuff.
Yeah. That's weird, though. Cause I don't know. I don't have Tinder. I don't think I want to go down that road. That's weird. But I thought it was more just like a hookup thing, but I guess it's not really. It's more.
People, I mean, they can call it a hookup thing or maybe it was supposed to be, but people want true love, you know?
Okay.
They want it. They're looking for it in all the wrong places. As maybe who says that? What's that song?
Looking for. I know the song. I don't know who sings that song.
Neither do I. All right, that's another thing you guys got to tell Shane about. So
yep.
Just
tell us,
Shane, about that. That's, you know,
scream it at your radio right now. Scream it.
That song is interesting though, because like it's got like a really obviously focused point, and it's something that a lot of people can relate to. But of course, it's like such a. Enormous track. Like, how authentic do we think that song actually is?
I don't know this is
kind of the thing I always think about in terms, like when I think about different songs, and I wonder what your opinion is on this, but like you take, you know, as a songwriter you're usually inspired by some, you know, specific thing that has you feeling, you know, a raw emotion one way or the other.
Yeah.
And then you're faced with this task, which is you have to make that a song, and there are like, you know, some written rules about like what
sure.
that's going to be.
Oh yeah. Absolutely.
And so you have to find this weird balance between your raw unedited feelings and the version of your feelings that will be a song that fits into like a chorus.
Right. You have to dumb it down in some capacity. Like you can't, no one's ever written down words that they felt and exactly said it in a song. I don't think.
Or at least not a song that anyone's heard. Yeah.
Not a good song, yeah. So yeah, you're right. That's something that I totally struggle with as a songwriter, like trying to figure out what the message is going to be and how much of it is going to be real from my like soul and my heart. Do you know what I mean? And how much of it is just like, well, I'm going to put this line in here because I think people are going to be able to relate to it, or like sounds cool,
or like you need a line there,
or I need a line there that rhymes with another
exactly.
line. Absolutely. So it's a constant problem. But I think it's interesting for me because when I first started writing songs for Silverstein, it was kind of the first time I'd really written like the gut wrenching, like, you know, scrape my soul out with a spoon kind of words. Yeah, scrape my soul out with a spoon. Not bad. That's pretty good, yeah. I'm just picturing like a pumpkin, you know, when you're scraping out the guts.
That's what I'm picturing too.
Good, hey, see?
Yeah.
This is it, yeah. Scrape out my stomach like a pumpkin.
Because now Silverstein is a butt rock band.
Halloween butt rock.
Oh, God. All right. Let's get back. I think this is a good idea.
Okay.
We're going to come back to it.
So,
I want to know more about what you think about this.
No, but when we started, you know, writing these these songs, and I was like, okay, this is, I'm really going to, I was going through some harder things in my life. I was a bit older than when I was like a punk rock kid, just like, you know, pretending I knew about government issues and writing like stuff like that, you know, about democracy or, you know, hilarious stuff when you're like 16. But once I got a little older and I started writing this emotional stuff, I really just felt like I can just be honest. I can say whatever it is that I want to say because no one's going to hear this shit anyways. And I'm screaming half of it, or I'm singing into a PA that's so quiet, no one actually will care or read my words. And then we put out, then we got signed and we put out the record. And then I was like, okay, well, this stuff's like all out there and it's pretty uncensored, like for my feelings and things that have happened to me. And then that's when, you know, the outpouring of like support and saying I can relate to your music and I, you know, and thank you, that all happened. And then that was tough because then the next record, I had to do it again on Discovering the Waterfront. I had to take that record and I had to figure out a way to talk about my feelings. But the problem that I felt though was personally, because I was like, I know the first record was successful. I didn't think it was going to be. Those words I wrote in my bedroom, I didn't think anyone was going to hear them. Now, whatever I say, millions of people are going to hear these words, and I'm really pouring myself out there, and I was scared to give them that kind of emotion and give them that realness. And I remember writing the song Ides of March. It's got kind of like some suicidal like kind of undertones, and to I've never tried to commit suicide, or I've never like had suicidal thoughts like seriously or anything like that, I should say, but there was like those kinds of wording and stuff in the song. And I was like, maybe I can't say this, like maybe I can't because I don't want
to hear it.
Yeah, people are gonna hear it, and maybe I don't want that. And then I thought about it, and I was like, well, if I'm gonna start censoring myself, like that's not right either, you know. So I made a decision right there and then that I'll never do it. I'll just put myself out there and whatever. And I mean, you talk about our latest record, it's definitely like the most personal. Yeah, like that song Toronto is like fucking about being in this apartment, like leaving and everything. Like it's, there's nothing more real than that song. And like I didn't sugarcoat it, I didn't change anything, you know. I put the words together the way I wanted to, and you know, I kind of was worried about the consequences later if you know, if I'm being too real or whatever. But you know, for the most part, I'll write a song and I think like, oh man, this is like so obviously about this and whatever. People are going to judge me for whatever. And then no one ever does. No one ever knows. No one ever calls me out. They're like, yeah, it's probably about Jesus or something.
Yeah. Do you find, you know, sometimes you have lyrics that are more oblique than others. Do you find that you get sort of taken the wrong way?
Oh yeah. All the time. That's the funniest part is how they always think, especially in our early days when we were touring with so many Christian bands, people assumed we were a Christian band and that the songs were like about my faith and stuff. I'm like, you know, there's no faith. Sorry, yeah. You know, but that's cool. You know, and I think that's important to be able to take away something, you know?
Yeah. To read what
it doesn't matter. You know, that's the like craziest thing too, is like, you know, I've gone through some shit in my life over the last like month and a half, and I'll listen to old songs that I like, I just like, and I'll be able to relate the words to my situation now. And I never thought about that before. And that's just kind of a cool thing about music, you know?
Yeah. That's like breakup. Like that's honestly, there's not a lot of good things about breaking up, but that is a silver lining, is it kind of can reignite passion for old songs. I remember. Yeah. Last time I got broken up with, which was years ago now.
Mm-hmm.
I fell in love with this record I hadn't listened to in a really long time, because like every line just like stabbed me.
What record was it?
It was Bon Iver's For Emma Forever Ago. And it's like, I would almost recommend, like, if you're sad, maybe stay away from it, because it's like,
yeah,
unless you got like a week to just like lock yourself in your room, it's devastating.
It's true though. But there's some of my favorite records, like I'm looking at my Page of the Lion record cover there. Like some of like that record, his first record called It's Hard to Find a Friend. That record I can listen to when I'm really sad or when I'm really happy. And I can take different things away from it, which is really kind of the ultimate thing. That's why when people ask me what my favorite record is, I sometimes say that one. Well, it changes, you know, but yeah, I sometimes say that one because of that, for that reason, that when you have a record you can listen to wherever you're at in your life. I even listen to it when I'm just kind of excited. It's, you know, it's weird, but it's
all right. So after the Raptors win today, we're going to toss that on.
Toss on some Pedro.
We're going to be confused about how to feel.
Exactly.
So do you think then, like, is authorial intent important to you then? Like, do you,
I'm sorry, what is this word?
Authorial intent. You're the author of the thing, what you intended to do. Is that, like, where does that, how do you rank that in terms of importance? Because, like, we're talking about how fans can kind of, like, listen to and interpret a record however they want. But, of course, when you're writing these words down, they obviously mean something specific to you. You have something you're trying to get across. So, like, I think what wins out in that?
I think, like, I think it depends on the song. It depends on the way you're feeling. There's times when I'll write a song and I won't really care about what the person listening to is going to think because it's for me. And then there's other songs where I'm almost trying to express a message or express a message of hope for people or whatever. And I think if you take a record, like a Silverstein record, I'd say it's like probably somewhere like probably 50-50 between those two types of songs. But I would say within any given song, I don't think that it's 50-50, you know, there's songs like something like Toronto is very personal. And then there's other songs like a song like Massachusetts, a song like Massachusetts, which is definitely a story that a made up story, but it's definitely something that people can relate to. And people tell me all the time how important that song is for somebody who's in a, you know, abusive relationship or whatever. So I think both sides of that are important. And I think there's a, you know, there's a level of expression between, you know, artistic expression between writing something that's for you and about you and also just writing a story. You know, there's nothing wrong with writing a fictional story. You know, that's still art.
No, yeah.
And that's still something you can get, you know, out.
Yeah, the expectation that every lyric needs to be something that actually happened to you, I think is kind of bullshit. Because,
it's totally
like,
bullshit.
You can, like, express different, you know, like fears or, you know,
drove 8 hours in a van,
right?
Texted on my phone, saw some cool Snapchat stories. Like that would be what songs would be about, because that's what people in our situation do like 90% of the time.
Yeah,
which is kind of sad, but I mean, true.
Like, yeah, that's definitely true. And I mean, like, the expectation being that, like, you are, like, constantly in a whirlwind of sadness is, like, you might be often, but at the same time, like, you can, like, see other people's situations and want to.
Yeah,
you know, you want to, like, make a comment, or you want to, you know what I mean? Like, you want to empathize with that, and you do. I think everybody does, right?
I think so. Yeah, I think a lot of times when people come and see our band too, and you know how it can be on stage. Sometimes it can be fucking ridiculous.
Yeah, but
I have my moments where I'm just like, I don't take anything seriously, and I think sometimes people are kind of thrown off or taken aback by that because they hear our music and it's very serious, and sometimes it's kind of downtrodden, and they want me to get up there maybe and be that guy. And then when I'm like either not serious or funny or like
riding an
maybe,
inflatable turkey.
Riding an inflatable turkey, yes, yeah. Which happened. Or a whale of sorts. Sorry about your whale, dude. And when that happens, like, I think some people don't. I don't know. I don't know how they.
Because those songs meant something specific to them.
Yeah, if it makes them feel like my songs are contrived. And it's not real because I'm actually a generally pretty happy, positive person. Or I don't know. I don't know what people want from me, but it's
no,
at
I think
the same
that's
time,
a fair point.
It's, you know, I'm not going to change, like, you know, how I feel on a given day, and to try to give some, you know, there's a certain realness about it. When I know some bands, they do go up there and they have a show to put on and they have a personality, and my personality is the way I feel that day.
Which in some ways is more contrived than just.
Absolutely, yeah, absolutely it is.
But it might not read as, you know, being contrived. It's a sad song and the singer's acting sad.
Yeah.
That seems to an audience member more legitimate when fact it is more contrived. It's an interesting paradox.
Very, very true. That's right.
I've never thought of that before until this moment. This is why we do this, folks. That's it right there.
That's it.
We just reached a breakthrough.
Yeah, it's true though. Yeah, I'm trying to think of like a specific example of a guy, you know, up there. But like, I mean, Pedro the Lion, to bring him up again, because I see his stupid face on my record player, but
it's not a stupid face.
He's getting hit with an axe, apparently. I don't know. See, like, he obviously is not taking himself too seriously with that picture. We'll put that on the Instagram, too. But he's a guy he's hilarious in between songs.
Yeah.
You know, and he takes questions between songs, and it's like, it's very entertaining. And I would love to have him on the podcast, actually. But then his songs are like, really, really devastating. Like, I think you referred to them as bummer tunes, which is a hilarious thing to talk about your own music.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, you know, David Bazan, Pedro the Lion, eh, bummer tunes. That's what he said. And everyone's laughing hysterically.
Yeah, and then he goes into like, the saddest song you've ever heard.
Yeah, like, yeah, you know, I could never divorce you. Like, this heavy shit, you know?
Yeah.
So it is an interesting point for sure.
Like, do you find, like, as a sort of, like, you've been thrust into this role as, like, kind of, like, a de facto role model. Like, people...
yeah.
You know what I mean? And, like, you didn't... To be fair, like, you didn't ask for that. You just wanted to write some songs. And now you're here, and you do kind of have this responsibility to be... You know what I mean? To be, in some way, the people... The person people think you are. Do you know what I mean? And, like, is that a difficult thing to reconcile with? Because, like, as you're just saying, like, it's tough. Sometimes when you're just being yourself, people think it's, you know, dishonest or doesn't live up to their expectation. And it's like, how much does that weigh on you? I would imagine that's difficult.
I don't know if it's difficult, really. I mean, maybe it's just because I've been doing it for so long. And it's, and growing up, like, I never felt like a rock star or like anything, you know, like we would play shows and, you know, the bands would be there like moshing for the other bands. And then they'd go on stage and they'd be wearing the clothes that they were wearing. There was no like, it wasn't like anyone was trying to be like Guns N' Roses or Motley Crue or have this like rock star persona. We were all just like people playing shows. So when we started going on tour, it was the same thing. And I just like talked to people like I would talk to anybody, you know, and fans or friends that we met, or I treated everybody the same. And I think that I still do that. I don't think I really, you know, treat anybody different. Like I'm definitely not a dick to fans at ever. And that's not because I feel like I have to be nice or someone's going to say something about me being a dick or whatever. I think I'm just nice to people because I legitimately want to and want to talk to them. And it's amazing. Occasionally, I don't know if this happened to you before, I'll be out at like the merch after the show. I always go out to the merch like 99% of the time. And, sometimes I'll like take a picture. I'll be smiling at the camera, and some girl will be like, "Yeah, look at that fake smile." I'm like, "What do you mean fake smile? Like, I'm smiling. I'm yeah, just the like the contrived smile, like the same smile you put on for like the other 50 photos." It's like, well,
that's my.
That's
smile.
Just the way I smile. Yeah. First of all, second of all, I don't have to be here.
Yeah,
I'm here because I want to be here and I want to meet you. So don't like be a dick to me.
Yeah.
Like. Sorry, I'm like nice. This is so people think I'm putting on some kind of act.
Yeah, yeah.
You know,
and
when it's like,
smart
no,
they saw through
I'm,
it.
I'm literally, I just like doing what I do. I like the playing of the show part, the writing part, the traveling part, and I actually like meeting people that enjoy my music. So I don't know. I in terms of being a role model, I don't know. I definitely think that there's a certain place for it. Like if I hear. Of, like if I'm in the crowd talking to kids and some friend calls another friend like the F word, the new bad F word that I think people shouldn't say, definitely shouldn't throw around in public, I'll say something to them. You know, like, I mean, I don't know if that's being a role model, but I feel like that shouldn't be a word people are throwing around. If I say something to them, maybe they'll think about it.
I actually had that exact experience with a couple fans talking to each other, and one of them said that.
Yeah.
And I was like, look, man, like I know it's like not why you're talking to me, but I just feel like I need to tell you that you can't be talking like that. Like,
yeah, I don't know. I mean, that's such a like, I don't know if that's an inconsequential thing, or I mean, maybe some people listening to this are gonna say, you know, I shouldn't say anything, or it's not my place to say anything. People can talk how they want. Well, I don't agree. So,
yeah,
you know, there's no place for homophobia or racism or sexism or anything like that at our show. It's our show.
Yeah,
that's the way
we
I
make
feel.
The rules.
So, yeah, I guess so. So, I mean, if that's being a role model, then I guess I'll take it. But, you know, I don't know. I try to do the right thing and say the right thing and lead by some kind of an example. But at the same time, sometimes I've had like 8 drinks too when I'm out there. So, I mean, maybe don't, you know, follow what I say and not what I've done.
Yeah. Yeah. Read the edited statements. Don't take it from the horse's mouth in this case.
Yeah. So, hey, what do you want from me? Right.
Yeah. I mean, it's tough. Touring is an interesting thing because like often you do have 8 drinks and you're, you know, and you kind of live in this weird world where that's okay. And
it
then
is okay.
Then you do your... You know, your job, which is like super fun, and it's all just this weird time.
Yeah.
Not to make it seem like it is all just one big party, but eventually the tour ends and then you come home and then what happens?
Like, yeah,
there's that weird buffer zone.
It's true, man. The difference between being on tour and being home, for some people is very drastic, you know, partying every day, and they go home and they don't even drink or anything, or they have, you know, some people have jobs too. I don't have a job, but some people do that, and other people have a relationship where they're, you know, living with a girlfriend, and they're kind of just, you know, and it's very, very, very different. And I mean, for me these days, it's pretty much the same fucking thing. I just don't have to sing. So, which, whatever, it's cool. I'm, you know, hey.
It's like not even just the partying sometimes. I find myself kind of dealing with a whole host of different things, like the way I dress. I mean, I came off Warped Tour, and on Warped Tour, you dress like an absolute asshole every day just because it's hot and you've got no other choice.
True.
And then even on a day off on Warped Tour, say, you like walk into a coffee shop like looking like you just came from the park, and it's just like, what? Why do I look like, and everyone's looking at you and you're just like, sure. I don't know. This feels weird. Why am I doing this?
Yeah. I mean, that's definitely a thing. Like it's weird for example, like showering when I'm on tour, it's very, you know, me,
twice a tour tops.
I shower the least in the band. Definitely. I do. There's no question. And I'll shower like, and people are going to throw up in their mouth a little bit when I say this, like I might shower twice a week
on tour
at the most twice a week.
I think less,
maybe less. No, also, I don't shower very much. When I'm
home...
He
keeps looking at his shower, by the way.
Dude, yeah, I don't know why.
He keeps looking at it.
Well, there's a couple loofahs. My friend's staying with me, and there's like a couple of those. They're called loofahs, right? Those.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I definitely don't use those things, but there's two in my shower. So, hey, make yourself at home, guys. I mean,
who travels with a loofah?
I don't know. They brought all their pillows, too. It's
That's
like,
so
I have
precious.
Pillows. But, yeah,
see,
no.
Someone on tour is never doing that. You know, just like.
Oh, no. That's not happening.
Just like, find a bar of soap in the bottom of a bag somewhere, and like, that's going to
be. Or just
it.
Hopefully another band dude left like a body wash container in there, and it's not like, put a little water in there to get the rest of the soap out. Yeah. These are real things that happen. But what I'm saying is like, I'm at home, I shower like pretty much every day, you know? Like I live like a normal person, and then when I'm on tour, I just don't.
Yeah, there's like a switch that gets flipped.
Yeah, it's just different. It's just a totally different thing for some reason.
You're a really late sleeper on tour.
Yeah, not at home.
No, you're up early here.
I'm up early at home, but on tour, I don't know what it is. Maybe it's partly to do. I was thinking about it. Like maybe I get revved up from the show. Like you know, we typically get off stage at like 11. So maybe I'm still just kind of wound up from the show, and that's why I don't go to bed till on tour, like sometimes till like 4 o'clock, and then I get up, you know, I have to get my 8 hours of sleep for my voice too.
Yeah.
And so if I, you know, I'm up like noon pretty much, or sometimes even later.
Yeah.
In Europe, it's real bad.
In Europe, I have no idea what schedule you're on in Europe. Like I think you're on like on Shane standard time.
Well, I can't adjust to the jet lag, like the 6 hour difference to mainland Europe. Destroys me. So you know, you figure if you generally get up at like, if I'm home, I get up at, you know, 9:30, 10 o'clock, you know, add 6 hours to that,
yeah,
and it's like 3:34, and there's days I get up at 3:30 or 4 o'clock.
Oh, for sure.
And sometimes it's still dark. or getting dark, I should say, like in Sweden and stuff, in the middle of the winter,
there's definitely days where
you don't see the sun.
Yeah. Ugh.
Oh, it's so depressing.
Do you find though, like, so when you take a long flight that way, you go into Europe, it's like, what, a 7-8 hour flight, depending on where you're going. But you get that 6 hours, so it ends up being like a 12 or 14 hour thing all done. You know what I mean? Like, you land and it's 14 hours later than it was when you left, factoring in the time zone.
Right, yeah.
Do you find it's more difficult to go, like, straight south, say? Like, you go down to South America, it's a very long flight.
No, I don't think it's, I think it's easier.
See, I think it's harder.
Because the flight, you're like still living, you know, on that time.
Well,
so
barely.
And I'm able to sleep on planes pretty well.
Yeah.
So for me, like if we do like the red eye, like the 10 hour flight down to South America or whatever it is, probably longer maybe, but and we do it overnight, I'll just sleep like this 7 hours and we'll be in the same time zone pretty much. It'll be fine. No problem.
I don't know. I don't like it. I like the time shift. It makes me feel like the flight is shorter somehow. Like, I was only on here for 8 hours, but it's like tomorrow already. This is great.
That's true.
Love it. And then you've got an excuse to have a beer the second you land.
I see what it is. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Always back to drinking, which is fine, I think.
I don't want to make a statement one way or the other on that. I mean, like, as a guy that's toured so extensively for such a long time, seen, what is it, 40 countries or something like that?
Yeah.
I mean, that's a crazy amount of countries. what, like, have you ever encountered anything just like absolutely next level crazy that even I don't know about?
The first thing that comes to mind is something that you do know about, and that's when we were in, when we made the stupid decision to drive in Russia.
Yeah.
Well, Belarus. Well, from the, where do we go? From the Ukraine to that, Belarus to Russia.
Yeah.
And we drove in a van, sketchy ass van, no seatbelts. And like, you have to understand, I guess most people listening to this probably haven't been to Belarus. One of the, what is it?
It's, is it in the,
no, what did they call it about the,
It's a, no, I know exactly what you're talking about. George Bush called
it this. Yes.
An outpost of tyranny.
That's right. Yes. Belarus apparently is one of the outposts of tyranny in the world, which I don't know what the fuck they're talking about. But anyways, if you've ever driven in Belarus, which you haven't, so I don't even know why I'm saying this, the trees are literally right beside the road. It's fucking scary. It's wintertime. They don't have like de-icing here on the roads. And our driver, the roads are so bad and are so full of potholes that our driver is basically swerving around potholes, because if you were to hit the size of these potholes, the size they are, it would disable the van.
Yeah, and to be fair, our van was pretty easily disabled.
Yes, yes. And I thought we were going to die for sure. Like, I thought that was like, there was no way we were going to make it through, especially when, well, it's also the middle of the night, and it's also like 7 hours or something. And all I can remember is the driver randomly stopping on the side of the road. Maybe you'll tell the story better than me. And then him getting out, and I was like, okay, I guess he's smoking. So you got out to smoke.
Yeah, I got out to smoke, and he was,
and then
pouring.
What did he ask you to do?
Well, he was, first of all, like, he was pouring, he had like one of those like big 3 liter like bottles of water, and he was pouring them on the headlights trying to defrost them, which of course is just gonna make them frost up even faster.
Yes.
But yeah, then he like held his hands out in front of him, like, he motioned and handed me the water bottle and like motioned for me to pour water.
Speaks no English, by the way.
None. Yeah, not a thing. So this was all done by, like, you know, really primitive gestures.
Yes.
So he's like motioning for me to pour this water into his hand, and I'm like, well, I don't know, dude, but okay. So I do it, and he's like splashing it on his face again. We got
to
do it again.
To stay awake.
And I was like, holy shit, it's over. This is it. Like, this is how we're all gonna die. And then I thought, that's not a bad way to die. I don't know if you felt the same way, but it was like, I don't know, there's like less cool ways to do it, like car accident in rural Belarus.
Jesus Christ, dude, that's dark.
Nah, I mean, you gotta, like, I don't know, you never think about that stuff when like things get dicey. You don't go like, there'd be dumber ways to die, this isn't that bad.
I don't know. I guess there's been times, like, and I'm not scared of flying at all anymore, but there's one flight I took that was like really crazy, and I was like, maybe this is it. And I was like, yeah, if I die in a plane crash, whatever.
Right?
Like, you know, statistically, like,
just
whatever.
Something that's a better story than like was crossing the street and got hit by a car. Like that.
I hope there's no one more famous than me on this fucking plane.
Is that from something? What is that?
I just made it up, but
it's good.
But I always thought of, I wanted to write a song one time, and I never did, about, you know, Farrah Fawcett died, I think, the same day as Michael Jackson.
Oh.
And she's like pretty famous.
Yeah.
But no one ever talked, like, she talked about getting like,
had no idea
left
she
in
was
the shadows,
there.
You know. I think there's another like old punk rock guy, I can't remember from what band, I think he died the same day as John Lennon too, or like killed himself the same day as John Lennon, and no one talks about him because of that, you know.
Yeah, it's kind of funny, but like selfishly you kind of want to leave some kind of legacy, like you want your name in the newspaper.
But no, but I definitely at that moment I wasn't like, I can accept this. No, I was like, I don't want to die in the middle of Belarus and have to have our bodies shipped over from the outpost of tyranny.
They'd stay.
They'd just stay in the snow.
Yeah.
Like something out of Game of Thrones. Kind of looks like it.
This got really grim, but honestly, it was scary at the time. And I'm not scared anymore. We made it through.
But another story, too. This is before you were in the band. Just before you were in the band, we were down in South America. And again, to any bands that might be listening to this, don't drive vans in sketchy places. Fly, because driving is somehow way scarier, because you don't know where you're going to end up. And we were driving in Brazil, and we agreed to drive from Sao Paulo to Rio de Janeiro, and we were in this giant blue van. Not quite a bus, but like one of those kind of like airport shuttle. So kind of a bus, but kind of a van, big vehicle. So we're driving in it. Everything's fine, beautiful, until our driver tries to take a shortcut through the favelas, which...
Oh, God.
Yeah. The favelas are, I'm sure people know, but they're basically just like where the slums where, you know, they have, I don't know, these people just basically live on top of each other, and the drug, like, basically they're all controlled by, like, the drug dealers. So we're driving through these favelas, and it's fucking sketchy. And I can tell, like, the driver and the promoter. Promoter speaks pretty good English, but they're arguing in Spanish about, or I guess it was Portuguese actually, because they were from Brazil. They're arguing in Portuguese about something, you know, and it looked pretty, like, bad. So like, are we supposed to be here? And Paul's like freaking out. Drummer Paul's freaking out. And anyways, to make a long story short,
why make it short?
Okay, I'll keep going. Well, it got real scary, and he kept turning around, and we went through, and then finally we get stopped, and this dude comes on and is like screaming at us in Portuguese.
Comes like into the
vehicle. So he makes a stop. It's like a roadblock. Comes in, and he starts like pointing guns at us.
Fuck.
And we're like, oh, and we have so much equipment. It's like, we're so much money. We're just like, and we can't speak to him, so we don't know what to do. So we're just like freezing with like our hands up. Well, there's another guy outside like looking around, and it was the scariest moment. I never had a fucking gun pointed at me before, and yeah. So we went through that, and they let us go after. It was a while. Like, we were sitting there for probably like, it was probably a good 5 minutes, which, and when you have like that situation, 5 minutes feels like 5 hours, you know?
Yeah.
And they let us go, and we were just like, dude, like, to the promoter, we're like, dude, that was not cool. Like, what the fuck?
To say the least, that is not cool.
That is not cool. And then we were supposed to do another drive, and the promoter, we kind of forced the promoter to fly us. And at that moment, we were like, hey, we're not going to tell our wives and girlfriends about this. Like, they worry about us enough in these places. So we had like a pact that we wouldn't tell our families or anything about that. And we would just kind of forget it. And I don't even know if they all know.
I was going to say, now, like, are you breaking?
I never talked about that. No, but that was really scary. And the funny part now, looking back, and we didn't know, is I guess I mentioned it was like a big blue van. Apparently, it was the exact same as the police
have. No.
The same model and the same color and everything.
What an oversight.
So they thought we were like police coming in, which, guys, it's like the police can't come in the
and
favelas.
And that says enough about the attitude of the favelas, that the cops come in and they're going to point guns at them.
Yes.
And like, that's how
exactly.
That's
going to work. And I think they were worried that we were police or something, or, you know, or something involved with the police, and they didn't know.
So if you were cops, there was a pretty high chance that they just would have shot you.
I don't know. I don't know the dynamic down there with that stuff, but yeah, man. So yeah, we've been through some stuff. I mean, that's just two I remember. I'm sure there's been like some other ones too.
Deter your, you know, like, do you still get excited about going to places? Like, I know we went back to Russia since that original thing, and we drove again in a slightly better van.
Yeah,
but we did make another
drive.
We did do it again.
Yeah, we're so stupid. Yeah, they talk us into it, though. I don't know how they do it, but
it's because I guess we still want to go, right? Like, despite these experiences, like, do you have interest in going back to Brazil?
Fuck yeah, I do. Like, I really want to go back to Brazil, especially because it's the only time we ever went to Rio, and we were so, pardon the pun, gun shy, that we didn't do anything. Like, I didn't even see anything in Rio de Janeiro, which is, like, you know, probably a beautiful city. So I would definitely want to go back, and I'm sure lots of people, everyone's always like, come to Brazil.
Yeah.
That's a real thing. Hashtag come to
Brazil.
Brazil,
what's up with that?
Yeah,
we're going to come.
We're coming, okay?
Just be cool. Don't waste your data plans. We got this.
But no, man, I'll tell you, like, when we first started doing the band, you know, and we didn't think we were ever going to actually tour, let alone leave Canada, let alone leave North America. So I remember the first time, like, when we got offered to play in Australia, the first time they offered us, and we were like, wait a second, we get to go and we don't have to pay anything? Like, you're just going to fly us there? And they're like, yep. We're like, we're okay. There was no like, oh, well, how much money are we going to make? And it was like, we didn't care. It was just like, and I still have that feeling. There's still like so many countries that I want to go to that I don't care if we get paid or not. I just want to I want to see Greece, for crying out loud. Like, I want to go to Greece, you know, and I want to go to Africa, you know, like South Africa. I really want to go, and it's hard, I guess, to work it out sometimes with the promoters and stuff, but traveling has become something that a big part of what I love about being in a band. Seeing, you know, seeing things and meeting people you know, experiencing those other cultures.
Yeah, it's got to be one of the best parts.
Yeah, totally.
And I say that like I'm not also doing it. Yeah, it is one of the best parts.
It really is.
Yeah, it actually, I don't know if you find this, it's like kind of a weird thing to say maybe, but I'm really bad at traveling outside of being in a band now. Like, I don't know what to do with my time when I get places and I don't have to play a show. Or I don't get to play a show.
Yeah, that's interesting. I mean, I just was traveling like for the last week, you know, yeah. But I mean, it was a little different because I went to Las Vegas to see my family that lives there. So that was, you know, easy family time.
Yeah.
But then I did go to Dallas and hung out with some friends. And yeah, it is a little different when you don't have to worry about like a sound check.
Yeah.
Yeah. Or anything. It's like, huh, what am I going to do? And then,
yeah, the
you
days
know,
feel so much longer. Like,
they
you
absolutely
just do.
Do.
Whatever you, it's
they,
crazy.
They do. But it is nice to be able to have time to just go see things and not feel limited. Like, you know how it is, like how many times we've been to certain cities and we've really not like, I mean, You've been to Paris before, right?
Yeah.
Have you actually been up the Eiffel Tower?
No.
See? Like, no. What the hell? That's...
Should I do that?
Yeah.
This is the...
You gotta do it once.
I mean, I guess you're right. I was more interested because, like, Paris is a city that, like, its national reputation, or it's, like, you know, international reputation is that it's, like, you smoke cigarettes, you drink coffee, you sit on a patio, eat some bread, drink some wine, eat some cheese. Like, that's the whole thing.
Yep.
That's all the stuff I love. So I want... That was the sort of version of Paris that I made sure that I experienced. So, like, Eiffel Tower, we'll cross it off the list eventually, but my first thing was, like, find a patio, do all that stuff. A terrace. Is what I wanted.
A terrace.
Yeah.
Yes.
It's interesting.
Go ahead.
I was thinking on my way here, like, you know, some of these places, like, for example, like, we're like Munich, Germany. Like, how many times have you been to Munich?
Many, many times. Probably at least 10 times.
And so, like, yeah, this kind of thing, like, you don't want to call it routine because it's definitely not routine. But I noticed the first time we took, say, Bobby, like, our tech to Europe, it made that so much more exciting because
yeah.
he had never seen any of it before.
Right, it's
and you
true.
Get to like relive the first time.
It's true, yeah. No, that is interesting. But no, I always like when we have like some, you know, young fresh meat, you know, young guys like coming out on tour with us, working for us or whatever, when they're excited about like places. I mean, Danny, our tour manager, is like yeah. the king of that.
Tall buildings. He loves America for its tall buildings.
Yes, or like we were in like Philadelphia one time and he's like, oh, I want to see the Liberty Bell. So I'm like, all right, sure, let's go. So it just, you know, seeing him excited about that, and then we saw like the Rocky statue and
he takes the
Love Park and stuff. Like, it's just, you know, I've done how many times I've been to Philadelphia, like 50,
yeah.
you know, and why not? Like, it made it fun again. You're absolutely right.
Yeah, he's been to the Bean in Chicago. I actually think like 7 or 8 times.
I've never been to the Bean in Chicago.
It's fine.
Isn't it just
it's a big
chrome
beam.
Yeah.
It's okay. It's like okay. good. It's they actually, I don't know if they built it like how recent it is, but it's great for selfies. I feel like it's the best sort of like tourist attraction because you're like just going to take a picture in it. That's like what you do.
Sure. Makes sense.
So I think the tourist attractions of the future are going to be things that you interact with on that level. Like, because it promotes itself if you take a picture of and in it. Think
Could
about
be.
That.
Could be.
Just saying.
Yeah, sure. I better go to the Bean.
I mean, check it out. Yeah, it's a good walk.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
All right, I wanted to go back to songwriting and to lyrics and to singing and kind of the relationship between all those things. We were talking earlier about how, you know, you have these raw emotions and you need to kind of like fit them into a song. And so you kind
yeah.
of filter them or edit them, say. But then that kind of... it might make it seem sort of like less genuine, but then you've got this whole other side of it, which is that music is melody and music is, you know, tone of voice. And you've
like the math part,
not quite the math part. I almost mean more in conveying the emotion. So if you had to like pare down a line, like make a line simpler, say to fit it in a song, but you can sing it in this tone of voice, scream it even, that makes it more powerful or like recharges it of that emotion.
Mm-hmm.
Like, how do you ever consider things like that? when you're recording a song, say like, you know, is that the right take that feels the emotion that I want to convey here? Like listening to that scream, does that make me feel as a listener the way you want me to feel? Like, do you do that on purpose?
Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah, for sure. I mean, I think that the math thing I brought up is kind of the opposite of what you're talking about.
Yeah, exactly.
That,
opposite.
Like, I can sing the words and I can sing them in perfect pitch. Let's not go that far. But and it could be, you know, technically it could be a perfect take, but is it a right take? Is it the right take? Because sometimes the right take might have a note that kind of drops a little bit, or might have a little bit of a crack in it, or something. There'll be something about it that kind of has that, like, that magic. And, you know, the thing that I've talked about a little bit on this podcast, but I like to bring it up because it's a real thing, and I don't know what it is like when you're hearing a song and you, like, get the shivers or you get the chills.
Yeah.
Like, a certain line will happen, you know, in a song. And there's certain songs I listen to every single time one part of the song does it to me. And I don't – and there's no way to quantify that, you know? Say – I don't think there is. Like, it's got to be a combination of the music, the words, the melody, the tone of voice, everything, right? And I don't know what that is, but when you are recording or something and you're able to sing that line, and then if the producer's like, we're keeping it, it's like, what do you mean? Like, that was a little, no, he's like, no, that was the one, because I felt that thing.
Yeah.
You know, I felt that shivery feeling, which I guess that's what you're just trying to do, and
the whole
and that's
time.
Conveying that emotion, you know, which I'm sure not everybody that ever hears it will feel that way, but certain people will feel, you know, that feeling, which is just, I don't even know what that is. Have you thought about that?
Yeah, there,
like that thing.
I know exactly what you mean. There are certain songs where that just happens, and there's almost no way to even put it into words. It's just like that part felt the best. That was I remember reading something about this where, like, it is actually something kind of, science ruins everything. It is like kind of a mathematical thing where it's like the right sort of mix of melody and, like, I don't know, registering the words releases like dopamine or something in your brain.
Oh yeah.
I don't know. I'm not a scientist, but,
Oh, you're not?
I know this lab coat is like kind of tricking
you.
Yeah. And I have the badge that says scientist on
scientist
it.
Scientist on it.
Says
I know.
Science man. I didn't know if you'd know. Yeah. I don't know. No, I know exactly what you mean. It's a really, I think I agree. Like, when you record, that's got to be paramount. Like, you got to be thinking about that. Like, not what the best take or like what the right take is in terms of like notes sung and like clean, you know, vocals.
Right.
It's like what's going to be the best. I remember, this is kind of an anecdote, but years ago, like maybe 2008, my old band, I'm Committing a Sin, made our first EP, and it was coming out on your record label.
That's right.
And I remember we were on your bus, and we played you like the first song from it or something, and you, like, I mean, I think you thought it was fine, at least good enough to put out, but you, like, said something about how, like, the takes, like, we did it all kind of in one take, we liked it really raw, and you kind of said, like, you know, that's cool, like, I get what you're doing, but you got to get the right messy take, like,
I remember
the example you used was My Chemical Romance, record, Three Cheers?
Yeah.
And you were like, that record sounds like messy and the vocals are like all over the place, but like they're exactly the right takes the whole time.
Right.
And I like
the vocals on that record, like, it's funny, yeah. I think that record, the vocals are perfect.
Same.
But, and they're not perfect.
But they're like a total mess, right?
But they're perfect for the emotional, you know, what he's trying to do. And there's also like the Take Max Sunday second record's like that too. There's some takes that are like, I can't believe they kept that, but it gives it like a,
it gives it life.
It
for
gives
sure.
it life. Yeah. It gives it life. Yeah. And it's certain bands just sound so, you know, sterile. Like when it's,
it doesn't
know.
Sound like a person anymore. It just sounds.
Yeah.
Yeah. I know. What
exactly.
You mean.
Yeah. That's right though. That's funny. I remember that.
Yeah. I'll never forget that. That's
the
just
right
like one of those things.
The right
yeah.
messy take. Yeah.
And I
yeah.
mean, like, I don't work too much in that arena anymore, but like, it definitely sticks with me for kind of everything. It's like that guitar part, like, you know, that's a weird guitar take, but it's got life and it's cool. And it's like, I think the right way to mess that up.
That's right. Exactly. Yeah.
Interesting.
Very.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, I mean, doing 200, you know, 150 to 250 shows a year, which is like not uncommon, maybe 250 is on the high end, but like,
yeah, back in like 04, 05, we definitely did like 250.
Which is a crazy amount of days to do anything, especially something as demanding as, you know, singing for half an hour to an hour and a half a night, screaming this much, like yeah. you're not sleeping that well. It's this whole thing. Like, what kind of toll does this take? Like, are you okay?
I mean, Shane told? Oh, are toll. You,
yeah.
Toll.
What kind no. of toll?
What kind of toll does it take?
It takes a Shane toll. That's what kind of, yeah.
It does. No, I mean, when we started this stuff, you know, there wasn't really anyone doing it quite like me, like doing the singing and the screaming. Like, typically bands back then, the lead singer would be like the screamer and then the guitar player would sing the clean or whatever. And a lot of people were really like shocked when they went to the show and was like, oh my God, he's doing both. And then that was the question. People were always like, how do you do it? How do you do it, man? Like, isn't it, you know, hurt your voice? And the answer is, yeah, it does. It's not easy. It does hurt. There are days when I'm like, I'm the fucking front man. And I sound like that. And it's, you know, but over time, I've actually gotten better. My voice has gotten stronger. I can sing better than I used to be able to sing higher than I used to. So I don't really know, but I absolutely think, like, when we first started doing it, I was like, I don't think I'm going to be able to like do this forever. Definitely didn't think 15 years later
you'd
I'd be
better.
Fine. I definitely thought it would be like, because, you know, bands like that, like hardcore bands and stuff, there weren't really any that had like long careers of that style of singing, like the real guttural, like, and singing. So no, I didn't know, but for the most part, like, it holds up okay. I drink a lot of water. I don't do much stuff. Like, some of the people on here, they're talking about like melting gummy bears in tea and
what?
Yeah. The gummy bear thing. Everyone's talking about the gummy bear thing and, melting gummy bears in tea and whiskey in there, which I'm okay with that.
Yeah.
And I don't know, like, just all these weird things that they do. And I just drink water, a lot of it. You know, I drink a lot of water.
Yeah, you do. Water's good.
Yeah.
It's definitely good. I feel like
I don't even warm up that much. Like, you warm up way more than me.
Yeah, I do. But I think, first of all, like, I smoke cigarettes. You don't do that.
That's, yeah.
But I don't know. I've heard conflicting things on whether or not that matters. Like, a lot of singers smoke, and I don't know. It's hard to say.
I don't know, man. It's like, the thing is some guys just have it too, you know? Like, there's like, for example, like Johnny Craig, the guy just can fucking sing.
Yeah.
I don't think he knows what he's doing. He's just good. He just, you know, it's like a God-given talent that he has. And I'm not that guy, you know? I guess I could always kind of carry a tune, but I've gotten better over time from practicing and trial and error and stuff, and, you know, and that's, you know, that's fine, but
yeah, I think warming up is important for sure. I don't want to say it's not, but like, I think the extent to which a lot of people do it is maybe excessive. And
yeah, I feel like if I warm, I don't want to warm up too much because I don't want to start like getting tired before I even play.
Right.
You know, and I think a lot of it too with warming up for me, it's more like I've already been up all day. I've been talking. I've been moving around. Like, I think I'm warm. It's just for me more like getting in the right mindset.
Yeah. See, I was going to say, I do it like, I mean, I sing like the same four songs, and anyone who follows us on Snapchat will have probably heard me sing some of these because I snap it sometimes. But for me, it's not about like really warming my voice up. It's about like convincing my brain that everything's going to be okay out there.
Right. That's true. Yeah. It's like, for me, it's a little bit of a test. Like,
yeah, you've got,
what's my
note?
High note? Yeah.
Yeah. Like, what is it? A D?
It's like if I can get up to like an A sharp, I know I'm going to have an okay night.
Sharp.
If the A sharp's getting a little raspy, a little rough around the edges, I'm like, oh yeah, sorry, sorry, Houston.
You guys just gonna scream those lines.
Houston, we have a problem. Yeah. So I don't know why I said Houston, but it kind of worked.
Was there a time specifically in Houston where this happened?
No, my worst shows, I had a really, really fucking rough one in Calgary once. We were opening for Rise Against. Oh, like 07. That was bad. I had a really, my worst one ever was somewhere in Netherlands. We had, this is way back in the day, it's like 05 or something. Couldn't sing like higher than like a G. And pretty much the high note on every song is like a, you got a G? Yeah, yeah, play a G for the people so people can go. This like is like a high G.
How high?
Like a third fret on the E string.
That high?
Yeah. Nah. That's as high as I could sing. I could go, yeah! But if I went, yeah, yeah, I couldn't go. I couldn't get there. So no, I couldn't get up to like a G sharp, which was a problem, and that was the worst. We played six songs.
Nice.
Headlining.
Oh boy.
Six songs. I was like, oh, sorry, yep. We're Silverstein, good night, and we left, and people were pissed.
Yeah, some angry Netherlanders coming to get their euros back.
They were pissed. But what can I do? You know.
That's the thing. What can you do? I mean,
there was nothing I could do.
It's not like breaking a guitar string. You can't just like take
You can't just replace the guitar string. No, you can't. It's yeah. So And I had, man, I'm trying to think of some other rough ones. There's been a few though, but less, luckily less rough shows than good ones or great ones. So I think, you know.
What do you think your best vocal performance on a stage ever is? Do you think you can answer that? A show where everything just felt right.
You know what's funny? Also in the Netherlands, one time in Amsterdam, got up there, just was like, it was like effortlessly. Like the notes just flowed out like easily. Like once in a while, I'd say like, that's like a one in a hundred maybe. Like one in a hundred shows, you'll get up there and just be like, I can do, like I'm invincible. Yeah. Every note is coming out and the screams are deadly. Like, but it, I'd say it's like 1 out of 100 when I feel like that. And then I'd say 1 out of 100, I'm like terrible like that. And then the other 98 are somewhere in the middle.
Yeah.
And whatever, you know.
When you have those really good ones, do you ever think like, what did I eat today? What did I drink today? Like, how did I live? How do I like recreate this moment?
Yeah, but it's there's way too many factors to that, you know.
Why you don't change your underwear.
Some days.
Right?
Yeah, if I have a good one after a shower, maybe I'll start showering every day. Yeah. And who has time for that? but no, that is funny though. You think about that, but there's too many factors. And also like, obviously days off have a big impact. When you have a day off, it kind of heals you, and then in a way you're better after a day off, but in a way you're
worse, I think,
also
too. Yeah.
Sometimes worse.
It's strange.
Yeah, it doesn't make sense, but yeah.
I actually feel like when I get off stage, I sing better than I sang the whole time on stage. Like I get off stage and I just start singing like Benny and the Jets or something. It's like, man, that's awesome. Like, why didn't I sound this good like 5 minutes ago?
I know.
But maybe I do. Maybe it's like in-ears trick me into thinking I'm worse than I am.
I think so.
Yeah, it's tough stuff.
I think so.
I want to like this. I know this is lead singer syndrome, but I just want to advocate for the backup singers here, the harmony singers.
Because
I think we... In,
backup
know, my,
singer syndrome over here. I'm ready for this. Yeah, this go is, ahead. Go ahead, backup singer
like,
syndrome.
This is actually like almost worse than lead singer syndrome. But it's like, I feel like our job is very difficult because like we got to be not necessarily like on pitch. We got to be like harmonizing you, the lead singer, whether or not you're on pitch. I mean, like, I come in with a harmony. If you're like a little flat and I'm a little sharp, or like even if I'm dead on, it's still going to sound wrong. I got to be like, I got to match your pitch.
Yeah, you've got to match. Yeah.
And if I mess that up, we both sound like shit.
Well, I mean, there's
but
some
it's
bands,
always going to be my fault. I'll
it's
just get
fucking snowing outside, dude.
Fuck off.
It is May 15th. It is snowing in Toronto. I'm sorry.
No, this
that,
is bad.
It's bad, too. It's like blizzardy.
Why
oh
do
my
we live
God.
Here?
Yeah, get us out of here. Hey, anyone listening from like Southern California, can you just adopt me and Paul Mark, please? We're coming. Just adopt us. We just need like a nice, like we'll just lay on the floor like a dog. It's fine.
I want a bed.
Okay, bed. Okay, me too, bed.
but
back to backup singers. Like,
sorry, yeah.
There are though sometimes bands where you'll see them and you'll be like, I think the backup singer is better than the lead singer. Like the classic one for me, no offense, Dan, was Story of the Year. Like the guy, the guitar player that sings the backups,
yeah, he's
is
awesome.
Fucked, like, he's so good.
His name Ryan?
No, not Ryan. Ryan's the other guitar player, Phil.
Yeah.
Phil is like so good at singing, you know. And it's
everyone in that band is so good at everything.
They are so good live though too. And Dan's like, don't get me wrong, like I want to have Dan on the show, and we're great friends. But yeah, that's like one of the bands where you're like, oh my god, that guy playing guitar over there, like singing, like. It's like almost like, should he be the singer? Which is, he shouldn't be. Obviously, there's a reason, I think, that it's the way it is. Maybe not, but man, like sometimes that happens in bands where,
yeah,
well, maybe it's just like, because the backup singer can oftentimes is singing higher.
Yeah.
So it sounds like more impressive.
And it's like it's mixed a certain way and like, you know,
it's
mixed a little
and
buried
and
it's kind of more forgiving on mistakes,
I think. Yeah, that's true.
And also like, I think you strive to explore this on this podcast, but there's so much more to being a lead singer, more pressures, different sort of like, you know, mental gymnastics to do, then it's not just singing, you know, it's more. And so like I tried to be a lead singer for a little bit. I didn't love it. Not for me.
No,
I like to sing and I love karaoke and I like, you know, I don't mind being your backup, but I find it very stressful.
Yeah, it's stressful. There's
but
no,
I've never done
no
it not playing
it.
Guitar, and I think that might change my tune a bit.
Oh, yeah. Well, I used to play guitar, you know, in my first band.
Of course I do.
And playing guitar and singing, that's all I knew. It's definitely way harder. There's way more to think about, you know, just like making sure you're on the right fret.
Yeah.
And singing the note. And like, you
and
know,
if the rhythm's messed up, like you played in a skate punk band, but like if you've got to play a weird rhythm over like a vocal, oh, it's just like.
I'm always pretty good at that. Like I'm pretty good at playing and singing for some reason, but the. Definitely, like the second that I didn't have to play guitar anymore, And I was like, holy shit, I can like run around. I was like, this is way
yeah,
better.
I heard, I was listening, obviously, and you and Adam Lazara talked about this at length.
Yeah.
And I felt myself getting more and more jealous with every sentence.
I mean, yeah. Well, I mean, yeah, I guess Good Boys, yeah, you're playing guitar in that band too.
See, that's the most stressful thing, and this is kind of where I get my perspective on this backup singing being harder. Because, like, on the parts of those Good Boys songs where I'm singing the lead, that's, like, stress-free. I don't even think about what the other guys are doing. But when I have to sing the harmonies, I'm, like, trying to hear...
Right.
I'm, like, trying to monitor the lead
and play guitar,
and play guitar. Yeah. And, like, hear what the... Because there's always three harmonies. Like, what's the other guy doing? Like, where do I slide into this?
It's very tricky, man.
And, like, you know, it's easy to remember a melody and, like, hit that. But sometimes harmonies are very strange.
Especially where you guys are playing, because you guys don't have in-ears either. Like,
no,
you don't
no,
have the same
yeah.
mix. You're playing a random venue with wedges. It's way harder.
Yeah, it's a total pain. Yeah. But that's enough belly aching for me. I just wanted to like...
Yes, just make sure the backup singers get their...
get their due.
Little jab in there, yeah.
Yeah, let us, you know...
That's right.
Just like maybe a little round of applause sometimes for us. I wanted to ask you one more thing. Because,
okay,
I mean, the
we're getting on, sure.
I mean, and the Raptors are coming on quite soon here. I wanted to know, you know, you put out a lot of records.
Yep.
Can you rank them?
Can I rank them?
Is it possible? Not including, though, I want to take a few things off the table.
Okay.
Unless you think you need to put them in there, I think the first two EPs don't need to
be
there.
No. We won't.
No 7 inches.
We'll go
short songs.
I like short songs.
I know you like it.
I don't know if I'd rank it. Well, okay. Yeah, I like this. I haven't ranked any albums or albums yet, so this is a different thing. For me, I would say my favorite album is This Is How the Wind Shifts, I think. And if you'd asked me a year ago, like when I Am Alive and Everything I Touch came out, I might have said I Am Alive and Everything I Touch. And now looking back a year later, they're definitely my two favorite. But I think This Is How the Wind Shifts has something about it. Kind of that, like, you know, we were talking about that
X Factor.
Yeah. Whatever it is, that like shivery thing that you get, that has so many moments of that on that record. And it's really interesting that it's my favorite. And maybe this is also a reason it's my favorite, because it's not a record about me. It's not a personal record at all. It's all stories. Every song is a story, except the one, you know, the song you wrote, Arrivals. That's all the other ones are like pretty much fictional stories. That obviously there's a certain level of I wrote it, so it's based on some of my experience, but it's all stories. So, you know, that record I think though is just a really, really solid record, and I love the overall tone of it. And you know, the fact that we were able to put together those two songs and make them overlap, and that actually worked out.
Yeah,
you guys
really
thought
cool.
You thought I was totally crazy when I
didn't think you were totally crazy.
Idea.
I wanna say that I put together a demo of it that was shockingly similar to the album version. I will send it to you again if you don't remember it.
Well, because my demo was insane.
Yeah.
I don't even know what I was doing.
It sounded
on
like Boys Night Out.
My first demo was crazy. I know, but it was the idea.
Was there.
But that record is totally my favorite. And then I'm Alive and Everything I Touch is number two. And then my third favorite would be A Shipwreck in the Sand. I think that record was such a important time for us to solidify ourselves as like a real band. We'd made like three. That was our fourth record, or our first three records we made the same way. Go in the studio, whatever, write songs, figure out the order later. Shipwreck in the Sand was like actually making an album and worrying about the order and worrying about the transitions between the songs and everything. And there's never been more fights there's never been more drama. And we spent so much time recording that record that that one came out, and that one was really special. So that'd be my number three. For number four, I'll go with Discovering the Waterfront. Which I think there's some great songs on it. And that was kind of our first album we'd made, you know, because the first album is basically just kind of a compilation of our first, 2 years of as being a band. It's not really like a real album, but Discovering the Waterfront definitely has some great songs on it. When people say it's their favorite, I don't tell them they're wrong, you know. They're absolutely able to have that opinion. So what am I at? That's four. What do we have, seven records?
That sounds right.
And so then there's three more. I would say Rescue would be number five. And not to say I don't think Rescue is a good record. I think it is. It has some good songs on it too. But we wrote it over like a 2 year period. It's very disjointed.
Yeah. And I get that vibe when I listen to it.
Yeah. It's very disjointed. And it's not really a very cohesive album. And some of the songs I thought were, that I thought were really cool at the time we recorded them haven't stood the test of time, you know, like a song like Forget Your Heart, I thought was like such a cool fucking song when I wrote it. And then now, like, I don't know, it's kind of weird.
It was never my favorite.
Yeah, I don't know. I think I still like it, but it's
definitely some good tunes. Texas, yeah. Mickey, big fan of Texas Mickey.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
I don't know why I like it so much. It's kind of a weird song, but I really like Anthony's part in
it. He does a great job. Yeah,
that harmony on that, like, to the mess I'm in, is such a cool. That is, I think, the harmony.
Yeah, there's a version of me singing that part too. I don't know if you've ever heard it.
No, I'd like to hear it.
It's he definitely made it his own, though. Like, the way
he's
sang
that croony
it,
style.
Yeah, he it was
like
cool.
Punk rock
cool.
Michael Bublé.
It's funny, that was a song I played on the last podcast, because he was on last week, and I played Texas Mickey.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's funny. Very relatable. Go back and listen to that episode, everybody. Okay, and then I got two left.
I think we know how this is going to shake out.
Well, the next one is, well, maybe not.
Really?
The next one, number 6 out of 7, would be When Broke Is Easily Fixed.
Okay, so yeah.
And that's our first album. And, I mean, I think it also has some very raw, like, awesome youth energy to it. We didn't know what the hell we were doing. And there's something about that, I think, that shines through. You know, that just, we're just excited kids, you know, in a basement playing. And I think you can hear that on the record, which makes it awesome. I really wish it was recorded better, though.
I kind of like the sound of it.
It's very, very unconventional sounding.
It's strange, yeah.
Strange. The screaming?
Yeah.
What is even going on there?
I could see how everyone hearing the record that couldn't see you perform that would think it's two people.
Yeah.
It's like, I think your screaming and your singing had never been more opposite.
No, probably not. But it's just, yeah, it's very, yeah. It definitely was at that point, my voice was two things.
Yeah.
I'm screaming. And there was singing, and there was no like ramping between or anything. Yeah. I guess I haven't really done that until recently, to be
honest.
It's
a good range, though.
Yeah, so that record, I think, and then absolutely number 7, our worst record and my least favorite is Arrivals and Departures. And I don't like the record. I think I like Worlds Apart's an okay song. Vanity and Greed is super weird. I kind of enjoy it.
Kind of my favorite.
And I guess I kind of like the last True Romance song, but.
What's track one?
Track one is Sound of the Sun.
I like that song.
It's okay.
It's pretty good.
I guess the song, maybe the album's not as bad as the experience of making it was the worst.
Yeah.
I hated making it. We were rushed, didn't get along with the producer, and just, yeah. And I mean, it sucks because I think that was such a pivotal point in our career. You know, it was our third record. We were coming off Discovering the Waterfront, that if we really were able to hit it out of the park, like if we could do it, if we could put out Shipwreck in the Sand at that moment, I think it would have been really good for like our career.
Because the bases were loaded, so to speak.
The bases were loaded, yeah. And
you struck
Tula Whiskey popped it up. Fuck.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
You know, it was one of those, definitely. So, yeah.
I just want to point out that I had thought about trying to use that expression somewhere, like the bases were loaded and, you know, you either do or don't hit the grand slam. I was thinking about this today, and I can't believe that like 2 hours later I was able to...
That's
use
right.
it in the most fitting possible sense.
That's right.
With the guy who would appreciate it the most.
And I was able to make a little Tulo reference. Although he's hitting two home runs back to back games now.
Yeah, he's looking good.
So he's back. Tulo's back.
Tulo's back.
All right, man. Well, hey, thank you for your coming over and interviewing me about stuff.
Yeah, no problem. Yeah, it would be weird if you were just talking to yourself.
Somebody. I think it was Cooper from. Hands Like Houses was like, are you gonna do two voices? Like, so Shane,
that was me that said that.
No, you said it too, but he just hit me up on Twitter and said that. So trying to give a shout out to my man Cooper.
Yeah, what a guy. Yeah, I refuse to let Cooper take credit for anything that I do. I love Cooper.
They're
what
gonna
a guy.
Be in Toronto too.
When?
Very soon. Trenton texted me.
Oh man,
soon, very soon. Are we doing a Hands Like Houses show plug?
Yeah.
For some
reason.
It's
gonna be after this comes out, right?
No, it's coming out tomorrow.
This is coming out tomorrow?
Yeah. Mod Club Thursday.
What's Thursday the what?
He didn't say, but I think Thursday would mean this Thursday coming up.
I'm not going to be in town. You got to go on my behalf.
Okay, I'll go on your behalf. Got it. Got it.
All right,
people. Well, hey, since this is like basically live and barely any edits, and hey, why not? We always play music, and now this time Paul Mark gets to play the song we will end this with. So, Paul Mark, what...
I get to choose?
You get to choose.
For anything from your catalog?
Anything from my personal catalog,
I
want to
hear 18 by Jerk Circus, obviously.
18 by Jerk Circus?
Yeah.
Okay. We'll leave it there. Thanks a lot for putting up with this week of my bullshit and hearing about my stupid life. Hope you enjoyed it. Next week we'll be back with an actual guest. No offense.
I'm not the guest. You're the
guest.
Okay,
I'm the
guest. Offensive to you.
Okay, then it doesn't make sense. Yes. Next week we'll be back with an actual guest, and it'll be good. So here it is. We'll leave you with, well, you call it out.
This is 18 by Jerk Circus.
On Lead Singer Syndrome. See you next Monday. Peace and love.
For me, I still was there for you.